Holy mac and cheese balls.
Guten Tag, meine Damen und Herren. Wir begrüßen Sie herzlich bei Formula One, einem seriösen Formel 1 Podcast, der nicht nur über Formel 1 spricht, der die Formel 1 auch zu euch in eure Kopfhörer bringt. An meiner Seite, Caro, ich wünsche einen wunderschönen guten Tag.
Guten Tag, liebe Beate. Wie geht es Ihnen in dieser rennfreien Zeit eigentlich?
Es wird schon etwas langatmig, aber es ist ein... Ich kann das nicht lang durchziehen. Es ist Licht am Ende des Tunnels. Es ist Licht am Ende des Tunnels wie bei der Corona-Krise. So.
Ja.
Und dieses Licht strahlt heute richtig hell, weil wir haben wieder einen großartigen Gast, der uns in dieser Episode erleuchten wird.
Oh ja. Und zwar eine unglaublich inspirierende Frau, Beate.
Genau, die Sarah Kavitzer. Die ist Aerodynamikerin bei Alpine. Ja, wir reden da einfach nicht mal lang herum. Wir lassen jetzt die Sarah einfach reden. Also viel Spaß mit dem Interview.
What was your first contact with Formula One?
Okay, my first contact with Formula One as a fan with my dad, because he's a big fan of F1, and I started watching the races with him when I was, I don't know how young I was. My first memories are Monaco GP when I was probably 5. I might have been younger. These are my first memories as a fan. I followed through Senna, and all the things that were happening in the 90s are like really clear for me. I truly remember everything because I was a very, very big fan. The first contact, as we can say, an employee, happened when I was in college, when I was doing my PhD, during my first year of my PhD in 2010. I did the calibration for the pitot probes for the Williams. The probes I was calibrating, they were used on the racetrack, on the car. And I was extremely happy, extremely excited, because obviously, you know, once they were even on the pole position on Barrichello's car, so it was very, very exciting.
Okay, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, very, very cool, yes.
When did you know I want to work in Formula One? Was there something you always dreamed of?
Yes, I was very, very young. I can remember me being in middle school, so that would be around 12, 13. I had two friends, male, and they were both obsessed. We were obsessed with planes and cars, and we were always talking about aeronautical things. And then when I started my first year of high school, I was settled on engineering. Probably already in middle school, I was like, no, I want to be an engineer. And then by 15 years of age, I was like, I want to be an F1 aerodynamicist. I was pretty settled. Being such a big fan from such a young age, my idol has always been Adrian Newey. It sounds funny when I say this, because probably most people watch F1 and they think about the drivers and they want to be in the car. I seriously never had this idea. Mm-hmm. My admiration was for the people who were designing and making those cars a reality. And Adrian Newey was winning. Mm-hmm. You know, when he was in the chief engineer at Williams, they were winning. Then he moved to McLaren and they were winning. Then he moved to Red Bull and they were winning. So I was like, oh, I want to be an aerodynamicist. I want to be like Adrian Newey. I was, very young. 15, yes.
Yeah. So you really had a clear goal.
Yes, from the very beginning.
Yeah.
It helped that I said my dad is very passionate, and he's retired now, but he's been his whole life a professor of engineering. He was teaching internal combustion engines and turbo machinery. So he taught me a fair bit about engines, and that was also a path that I considered. But funnily enough, my very first idea was aerodynamics. And then after studying engines and understanding more about them, that could have been like option two, let's say. But my main idea was always aerodynamics. I want to shape the cars.
How was your way into Formula One?
I did a degree, both the undergrad and my master's in mechanical engineering in Cagliari in Sardinia, which is the place where I'm from. And then I knew that a good way into F1 is to study in one of the golden colleges, golden universities, which are the places from where most teams got their aerodynamicists. So I got accepted for a PhD at Imperial College London, and that's where I studied. But I have to say that something else that helped me was doing the Formula Student. Mm-hmm. When I was in Cagliari, I had a friend from another city in Italy, and they had a team. And obviously, Formula Student is like a mini Formula One team. I don't know if for people who don't know what Formula Student is, it is a competition between university students. It's mm-hmm. something that started in the United States and then has moved to Europe. And so the students have a set of rules. They are very similar to the F1 rules, to be honest. And they have to build a car. Usually an engine off the shelf is picked, an engine like 600 cc's, so usually motorbikes. Mm-hmm. And it gets modified according to the rules. And then the students, they have to build the frame and the car, everything around this engine, following the rules. It's very challenging because you have to do everything by yourself, and then you have to present your costs and justify everything that you did. I really wanted to do this, and there was no team in my city, and people were not even very keen on doing it. But I insisted, and I finally managed. It was late to 2006 when I set up the team, and then I was team leader for 2 years, and it helped me so much. I think it truly helps in clarifying your mind in what F1 or motorsport, what it is, what it means to work in a similar environment, having to design with all the constraints in mind. And you understand if you like it, if you like working in a team with very strict deadlines. I loved it. And that was like, yes, I truly love this. And so I had a very strong motivation.
Now, what exactly are you doing?
So now I am an aerodynamicist, what I wanted to be. The role of an aerodynamicist is to shape the car mm-hmm. aerodynamically. So we have some simulations. They help us in deciding which geometries might be the most appropriate. So they get designed in 60% scale to be able to be used in the wind tunnel. Mm-hmm. And then they get tested on the model. And as an aerodynamicist, I also look after these tests. So I am in the wind tunnel we call it the hot seat, because you have to direct the test and look at the numbers and be sure that everything is correct, that the quality of the data and so on. And so then afterwards, obviously, we have results from both simulations and wind tunnel. I look at the data, we look at the data as a team, and we decide if the part is worth, this new geometry is worth going on track.
Now, of course, your season looks completely different to all the other guys who work on the track. What I think about is, like, you know that there's a race ahead, but yes, you're working on something completely different at that
yes,
moment.
Yes, yes. That's something we joke always about, because, for example, I can't say anything, but I look how the 2022 car looks like exactly because I see it every day. Sometimes it's a bit funny because you have to bring your mind back to, oh, yes, this was the update for this weekend. So we don't have yet what we currently see in the tunnel. We are still, but this is supposed to be good. It's almost living in two different universes. I have to remind myself that we're not in 2022 yet. We're still in 2021. I get confused when I look at, you know, expiration dates. I look at and think, no, this is expired. And then, no, we are in 2021. Not. So from that point of view, it's a bit funny. But because I'm office-based and I work on design, I have, let's say, the privilege of not working during the race and watch the race and enjoy it. So that's actually a positive, because in the past I was a racetrack engineer my first role was actually a performance, and I had to work. And it's actually very, very tiring. You do 16-hour shifts sometimes, and obviously you are knackered afterwards. And even if you are not working during the race, because from the point of view of aerodynamics, once you have your parc fermé, nothing can be changed. So obviously you substantially don't work from quali onwards. Mm-hmm. You're so tired that in the end, yeah, you still watch it, but you are thinking to get some rest for the Monday more than screaming at the TV. But a positive thing is that I still get to be part of the race sometimes. So we have a scheme, a volunteering scheme, mm-hmm. and when you can do race support every now and then on a Sunday. And it's quite interesting because what we do, we help the strategy team in understanding what's going on around us. So we listen to the other teams and we know what they're doing, if they have, you know, problems, if they are changing the strategy. Sometimes they see things about our car and we are able to have feedback, like graining on the rear tires. Mm-hmm. And sometimes our driver doesn't know, but we know because the car who's following can see.
Yeah.
And they tell on the radio. It's quite interesting because you still watch the race, but you watch it with a headset and other people's voices in it. And you still see what's happening on track, but you also know the secrets.
That's interesting.
It's amazing. I really love it. I really, really love it.
I'm always watching also with Formula One TV. And yeah. With the onboard cameras, and it's so interesting to yeah. at least to hear all the team radios from yes. the drivers.
Yes, yes. When we do the race support, we are in this ops room, which is full of screens. I always say it looks like NASA because there are so many screens and you have everything. Obviously, you have the TV, but you also have all our cameras. So I can watch the camera car all the time for the whole races. For the whole duration of the race, and it's like, and their perspective is amazing. It's completely different.
When is the next time for you to go back to a track? Is there anything planned?
As public to Silverstone. Now it's so difficult to say because since the coronavirus happened, everything has been very, very strict, and mm-hmm. at the moment. It's a very small group of people who go on track. Obviously, we all get tested. Even to go to work, we get tested. I've been at the track, for example, on Thursdays to have a wander around and look at the garage and the cars, not just ours. Then you go on substantially. You have a pass for the Thursday and you can go and wander. You can't go inside other people's garages, but you still see their cars mm-hmm. very, very close by. You are in the pit lane. But now this hasn't happened in quite a long time, since 2019. So I don't know when I will be on the pit lane next. That's tricky to answer. Yeah.
Hopefully soon.
Hopefully soon. Hopefully, yeah. Yes. Hopefully Silverstone 2022, I will be able to go back on my Thursday wander and see everybody's car. I want to do that. It's really, really nice.
And do you also have a look at other cars? So, okay, they are doing this parts that way or this way, and yeah, we should try this, yeah?
All the time. Those photographers that you see on TV, you probably have noticed that there are plenty of people with these very long lenses and they take plenty of photos. Those are people that the teams pay to spy. And so every weekend, we get hundreds of photos, very high resolution photos from these photographers. And we constantly look at what other people are doing because we want to have inspiration, new ideas. We want to understand where we might be missing because mm-hmm. maybe someone's doing something we are not. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we copy, which is in school. Copying is bad. In F1, it is not. F1, everybody copies. So we do look at that. This is the main reason. And then sometimes you discover that someone is doing something illegal. You know that there are, you know that there are, even now there are some, it's been going for some time, the issue about the flexi wing and the teams that are discussing between all of them. Some people say, oh no, it's fair. Other people say it's not fair. And obviously that's something that people noticed because we have all these footage, all these photos, and we truly inspect them to understand what people are doing and to understand if we are missing on something or if something we haven't done it because we think is illegal. And so we want to clarify.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Another question, it just came into my mind because the factory is in, I'm based in the UK. Brexit, I think it's very hard to get new parts to a track.
Yes, it is. It has added to a bureaucracy in a very, very hard way. And if a visa will be needed to travel from the UK to Europe, I'm not saying it will become impossible because we already travel overseas, but it's definitely going to add to our bureaucracy even more. And the parts, luckily, the majority of them are from UK-based suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
When you have your car traveling overseas, you also need to have simply your oil shipped there,
mm-hmm.
all the other consumables that you need for a race. And it actually happened once in the past that we had an issue and the oil didn't arrive on time. This was despite we had done everything on time. It was an issue from the supplier. They had had troubles and a few hours late. So we lost the FP1, something similar.
Mm-hmm.
So it always requires very careful planning. You didn't have to do that for Europe. So
okay.
Now you always have to plan in advance and think about borders, even when you go to Europe, something that before you didn't have to do.
Mm-hmm. When was a race weekend successful for you?
Obviously, podiums are the best. We don't get those too often. At least this year, we haven't been getting them, unfortunately. At the moment, I say we're happy when we got both cars with points, and especially when we do better than our direct competitors. So that's definitely something that we can be happy with. We have to be realistic and look at the situation. And it's not that we are not good enough. It's the midfield is really tightly packed.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, maybe the others are slightly faster than us. But when you look at the times, it's tiny amounts. So in the end, there is also a component of luck, which some people say doesn't exist. It does exist. You can minimize the impact of bad luck, but it still exists. So,
What would you say, what is the most challenging part about your job?
I would say most challenging part is the pressure, because it's a very, very intense environment to work in. And anybody, it doesn't matter which role you are in, anybody has this very, very strong pressure of being constantly focused and delivering results in a very short amount of time. So if I think about my department, people who design, they have deadlines because parts have to be sent to the wind tunnel. The people who make the parts, they have the deadline because the parts have to be tested on a specific day. When you are in the wind tunnel, you have to be extremely focused because you have to be sure that you are testing what you are meant to. You can't have a mix up with the parts that you have on the model, and you have to look at the data, and you have to be careful with everything being, every system working properly. And if the systems don't work properly, you have to react very quickly. And same is on track. So it can be very stressful. But at the same time, if you ask anybody who works in F1, they will tell you that this is the most exciting, probably the best part. And plenty of people who leave F1, they come back because they miss this. They want the pressure. But I can say it's not for everybody. No? Yeah.
And how long do you work in Formula One now?
I started in 2014. So this is my 7th season.
Yeah. And what's your most memorable moments whilst working in Formula One or whilst working for Alpine?
So if I have to choose a moment that is linked to the track, obviously the podiums, or finishing fourth in 2019, that was like the beginning of, oh yeah, yeah, we are, that's our...
There's something happening.
Yeah, we're improving. And then, you know, 2020, seeing Esteban on the podium, seeing Daniel on the podium, it was like amazing. We hadn't had a podium since Renault had come back. Those are our best results. So it's such a big satisfaction. But if I can choose a moment that is not linked to the track, something that has been extremely memorable for me is that last year I had the privilege to take part into the ventilator challenge. So with the other F1 teams, we volunteered to build the ventilators for the coronavirus crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So while we weren't working on the car, the companies, they sort of lent us to another company. So we were furloughed, but we were still testing, and personally I was repairing the ventilators that weren't working properly, so changing valves, regulating those valves, finding leaks and so on. And then those machines have been sent to hospital to save lives.
Okay, that's
and
cool.
They've also been sent the same model, because we worked on them for a month and a half. We worked on them like mid-April to the end of May. And then on the beginning of June, F1 started back in mm-hmm. 2020. So we started, we substantially found all the issues with the chain, because there were some issues initially. So we found the problems, we helped the company to streamline the process. And then we trained the people who after us continued. Mm-hmm. And it's been great, not only because I had the chance to truly help people who were really unwell
mm-hmm.
at that moment. I was extremely lucky not to get coronavirus, but other people were not. So I was able to give my contribution. But also we were working together with the teams who were our enemies on track. I was on a shift and I was working with Racing Point, and definitely we've always been on track, we've always been direct rivals, but in that environment we were collaborating towards a common goal, and it was amazing. And that was like, it truly showed what the spirit of F1 is, because it's true, we call them rivals, we call them enemies, but in the end this is a sport. And all of us, we are fully aware of it.
Yeah, we race as one.
Yes, exactly.
That's a very, very cool story. That's probably the coolest story.
Oh, wow, thank you.
Because I was expecting something completely different. It's such a cool story.
Thank you.
And now, other question. Why aren't there more women working in Formula One? And what really needs to be done to really have more women in Formula One? Because we all see there is something happening. You see more women on track, but there could be much more.
There could be much more. And this is actually a difficult question, because maybe I'm different from majority of women. I didn't think that this wasn't a place for me because it's so male dominated, but probably many women got discouraged by this. And mm-hmm. There are many things that can be done, both from the point of view of the media and from the point of view of what is done in schools to encourage women and to make them believe that not just in themselves, but also that they can truly bring an added value to the industry. So definitely the media, they should show more women, because, yeah, you see some women on track, but there are even more women behind the scenes, and we are never shown. Women in aerodynamics are still rare, but in the main design office, they definitely have a good bunch of women, and nobody ever sees them because they're there doing essential things like cooling, like looking at the composites and looking at the structural integrity of the car and the components. And this is, you know, safety. It's extremely important. But nobody knows that those calculations have been done by women, because they are never shown. So the media can do a lot from this point of view, showing us working behind the scenes. Schools can do a lot, because definitely girls from a very young age, they need to be encouraged.
Mm-hmm.
We been doing something. There is the There to Be Different organization from Suzy Wolf. I am part of it as a volunteer. We do our days on track to encourage young girls to be curious about science, but also we let them try driving on the older ones. They drive on track on go-karts. And it is extremely exciting for them because it's a very encouraging environment. And it's a pity that this only happens so rarely. You know, mm-hmm. the events are once or twice a year. It could happen every day. Why do we have to have a special event to encourage girls? They should be encouraged every day in every environment. Mm-hmm. It's very important to have people who think differently. And women do think differently. It's, I don't think that being a feminist means that we have to say that women and men are equal, because this isn't true. Women and men are different, but this being different doesn't mean that one is superior to the other. We can do the same things. Maybe we do these things differently, but we can achieve the same results. And this is not because we are men or women. It's because we are human beings and we are both capable. And we have to recognize that these differences are an added strength. A woman will tackle a problem and solve a problem in a different way. And this means innovation. From doing things differently, you have opportunities to improve and to progress. And so it is good for a company, for a team, to have an environment which is the most diverse possible. Mm-hmm. And women add to this because we still don't have enough. We need more. We need more women on track. We need more women behind the scenes where there are problems to be solved and where these problems can be looked with different eyes, with new eyes, to add to the innovation. So companies should, this message is sad. We know about this because Alpine is doing a lot to improve and to pass this message that diversity is important, but I don't know how much the same message is communicated outside. Mm-hmm. Girls and women have to be conscious of this. They can bring added value to motorsport, and they have to make themselves strong of this truth. It is a truth. Mm-hmm. We can bring so much, so we have to propose ourselves. And we have to say, I'm good, I'm capable, I can give you good results, and you can improve from having people who can think differently. You can improve as a company. Mm-hmm. And women are part of this. So we have to be conscious of that.
Yeah, because the strange thing is, I was raised in the 90s. So when I just had a look at Formula One races, it was 100% male dominated. Yeah. So I never thought about working in a Formula One environment.
Yeah.
And now the more women you see, that's why it is so important for us to have more women in our podcast, just to show there are women working in Formula One and just to inspire others to maybe go the same direction. Yeah.
There are, and it is important to have more, to move forward, increase diversity. So we need more women, and women have to be conscious that they are wanted. The mm-hmm. company wants them. So I've always said to anybody who asks me for any advice, let people tell you no. Don't be the person who says no to yourself. Send your CV, go for that interview, go for that field of studies if this is what you want to do. And don't be the person who stops yourself from moving forward. And even if someone else stops you, ask for advice, ask for feedback, and try to improve, and try to make any constructive criticism that you receive something that helps you grow and improve. And so the next time it won't be a no, it will be a yes. Yeah. This is very important.
That's just my last question. So what would you recommend to someone who's interested in working in Formula One?
I would say, if this is your dream, don't give up. Go for it. Do you want to be a mechanic? Just go for it. Even if you will find people who tells you no, just keep going. Because as I said, unless this no comes with constructive criticism, you are going to keep trying till you fill the gaps and you are accepted. You might want to be a mechanic, you might want to be an engineer, you might want to be a technician, you might want to work, I don't know, there are personal trainers who take care of the drivers. You might even want to be a personal trainer who trains the driver. Why not? Why a woman can't? And choose what you have to study carefully. Obviously, if you want to work in aerodynamics or in any other engineering related field, make your research so that you can do the proper studies to reach your goals. But seriously, don't stop because someone has told you no without good reasons behind this no. Because it happens that you get a no without a good explanation, and that's not why you shouldn't move towards your goal. We are in 2021. If someone brings the idea that a female physiotherapist for a male driver is inappropriate, this is just an excuse.
Yeah.
Because women are able to be professional as much as men.
Yeah, definitely. 100%.
This is not a good reason. And so if she or any women who want to go into this field receive this kind of answer, that's not a good no. That's not the kind of no that makes you stop. That's the kind of no that makes you say, okay, this person isn't ready for me. I'll find someone else who is. If a no doesn't come with a true constructive criticism, it's not a no to be accepted. It has to be, just let it go. That doesn't count.
Yeah. And last question, what are your goals for the future?
Oh, wow, this is a good question because at the moment it's, everything is changing in F1. And I have to be honest, all of us, we are asking what is going to happen. Are the new cars going to be as interesting as everybody hopes? So hopefully it is. Hopefully we can keep going. F1 still is successful and hopefully the future is bright. So I hope to be able to stay and progress with my career and to have, a long future in F1. If for some reason F1 is not part of the plan because, never say never. We don't know what's going to happen with the cost cut and everything. Teams might start to decide that they are going to reduce the number of people or that aerodynamics is not going to be the same as it is. We are talking about getting rid of wind tunnels in 10 years. So maybe I have 10 years in front of me in F1. And then afterwards, I will think about something else. Mm-hmm. It could be applying my knowledge to a different field. We've already seen that Mercedes is dipping their toes into the America's Cup. So definitely there are other places where aerodynamics in sport can be useful. Mm-hmm. So maybe I do see myself in F1 for at least another 10 years. After that, with all the changes, we will see. Maybe I will still have a place in it. Maybe I will find another way to apply my knowledge and to still be part of these sports somewhere else. I don't know, maybe, as I said, in 15, 20 years, I will be in a different team doing something for a different kind of sport. But I think I will stay. I will stay as much as I can.
Becoming the new Adrian Newey.
Oh, that would be, oh my God. That would be the top dream ever.
Why not dreaming?
Yeah, exactly. Why not? It's a dream. So.
Ich finde sie so extrem cool und die ganzen Geschichten, die sie erzählt. Vor allem die Geschichte über ihre schönsten Momente in der Formel 1, dass es eben jetzt nichts ist, das an einem Rennwochenende stattfindet, sondern wirklich außerhalb, wo es um Zusammenarbeit mit anderen Teams geht, im Kampf gegen die Pandemie. Also da habe ich beim Aufnehmen schon so ein kleines Tränen in den Augen gehabt, weil das so schön war.
Einfach toll, da wird einem einfach warm ums Herz, oder?
Genau, fangen wir jetzt an, Aerodynamik studieren, Caro.
Alles klar, deswegen müssen wir jetzt gehen, weil wir müssen uns schnell inskribieren.
Für das Formula One Racing Team.
Korrekt.
Vielleicht finden wir auch einen anderen Sponsor noch, Birkenstock. Dann ist es das Formula One Birkenstock von vom Lions-Team. Nächste Episode gibt es natürlich nächsten Sonntag wieder und da bekommen wir ärztlichen Beistand, nämlich Dr. Raoul Chottai ist damit dabei. Das reimt sich, oh mein Gott. Oh mein Gott. Das ist der Arzt, der Teamarzt bei Aston Martin.
Und ich will ja wirklich nicht viel verraten, aber in der nächsten Episode, wir haben da auch Live-Action dabei, also wirklich einen akuten Notfall während des Interviews.
Genau, also unbedingt dranbleiben, es wird richtig, richtig arg. Ja. Und bis zum nächsten Mal. Auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiederhören.
Auf Wiederhören, stimmt.
Pops, pops. Pops, 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 pops.
Oh Gott, yes!
Holy mac and cheese balls.